说出来，我没说的很少。And just in the same rule, in the last 50.5.1.9, I'm just a little confused whether those are cumulative or is it located within an approved building platform when one's required and otherwise not exceeding site coverage?
Yes, I think it could be just teased out into two separate scenarios.
Yes, but maybe better as two separate bullet points. It's sort of confusing because people tend to think of building platforms even on a residential site, the area they can build their house on.
That's right. I agree. It can be teased out into two separate circumstances.
And the next rule, 30.5.2.1, and it just requires compliance with internal boundary building setbacks. I'm just wondering if that's practical for the micro hydro electricity generation facilities. They're usually built on springs. There's also an issue of the 20 meter setback from waterways.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I've noted that. I can see the issue.
Across the page in 30.5.4, in the biomass electricity generation, and it's got in the final brackets and industrial activity areas within the structure plans. I'm not sure what that is related to, whether there are any in the plan. And B, would it also apply to rural industrial subsets?
I think what it's trying to say is that it could be an industrial area on a structure plan that's not zoned industrial, so the potential special zone, for instance, with an activity area that's designated for industrial, not designated that provided for industrial purposes. And the second question about the rural industrial subzone. So your question was, would this be applicable in the rural industrial subzone?
Well, sure. Rather than what? I would have thought the rural industrial subzone is the ideal area to allow material to come from off-site to on-site. Like it probably produces enough anyway.
ownership? I think the short answer is no, because it's not specified.
But I'm just wondering whether it's from something. And panel quite happy if you professionally recommend things that are not covered and we can consider. If you thought it was sensible, you can tell us. If you don't think it's sensible, you can equally tell us.
Thank you. Noted.
Before going to the next one, try to go back to 5.3.3, just about the wind electricity generation. Just in terms of the 35.3.4 regarding the height in the zone and in regards to the rural and distant character areas, just the and where it's measured to and from, just the consistency between that and that was, which was in the rural districts when we heard those.
Yeah.
Just probably to make sure that those, I'm assuming the effects are rather similar in terms of the amenity, apart from the noise, but just to see that they're consistent, that was all.
Yes, thank you.
Now, just moving to your section 3.2A report. As an indication, we're getting close to the end. Page 40. In paragraph 12.1, we're talking about the telecommunication companies and their requests in relation to the NES on telecommunications. Isn't the requirement of the Act that when an NES comes into effect, the rules will automatically become part of the plan?
Who schedule calls?
No, it's section 40 something. I haven't got it up, but there's a provision in the Act that an NES is automatically a rule on the plan. That's the whole point of this. It seems to me that it really is irrelevant what we might say now, because it's going to happen anyway.
A draft and then you don't know what's in the final document.
Well, it's back to paragraph 14.12, page 45. Suppose that that's where you're defending the location of the flood protection works as the utility section. Isn't flooding a natural hazard?
Question, I'm just thinking, yes it is, sir. Sometimes work's undertaken within the bed of a river to manage that, but it's still in the context of it being a natural hazard where anything could overtop the banks.
Mm.
I was just thinking about different, you know, scenario.
Do they have stop banks here that are managed as part of the river flood protection works?
Not as much as other places in the country, but I know that there is a resource consent granted under this operative chapter for works in the Mitsuhi Tuki to protect a road carriageway, I think. So but here's the other district, because we've got such confined river channels. Not like other places.
Isn't Triangle Delta probably the most critical in terms of fabrication risks, isn't it?
Yes, and are you any work to get from there to do with the airport designation? And
well, no, I mean in terms of Triangle Country, but we had that reference to that rule before.
That's fine.
I'm just wondering whether there might be some validity in the submitters in having those rules as part of the natural hazard section, because there are means of mitigating the natural hazards rather than providing them as a utility. That's why I asked you the question. You agree there are natural hazards. Flooding is a natural hazard. That's a matter of whether the protection is a mitigation method or is it a utility.
Yeah, thank you. It's another thing to note that perhaps in the context of the activities within this chapter were confined to network utility operators, perhaps see the advantage of it being there, but given that that seems quite broad as well, that application is not helpful. You may not be familiar with the natural hazards chapter, but it doesn't include rules. And there are a sort of snattering of natural hazards related rules in the proposed district plan that are really rolled over from the operative. So that's one reason perhaps why it's been retained here.
On page 48, paragraph 14.46. You seem to say that you're happy as long as site coverage requirements are not exceeded with that. But the activity is within a building platform, presumably the site cover issue is already dealt with in the rural zone.
Yes. Is there not another rule that limits the area of these?
I don't know. I was just responding to your comment about site coverage. You believe the statistics of detached electricity generation of up to 5 kilowatts would be acceptable, subject to design controls. So I'm just trying to ascertain whether what you're saying is if they were in the northern platform in the rural zone and up to 5 kilowatts, you'd be happy. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. In a rural zone and a building platform and in other zones, if there's applicable seat.
On the final page 53, and paragraph 14.4.2.7. This the hydro generation zone isn't in a stage one, and presumably it won't have the same aerial extent as it does in the operative plan, given the contactor walked away from their previous.
In stage two, so the hydro generation zone and the financial contributions part will is a segment of the operative district plan about financial contributions, and they're related to the hydrogen generation zones. So they'll be revisited as stage two, and it's probably a bit early to say if the feet has shown on the planning maps will be revisited. Even though it's clear, I'm aware of contact selling land and around by the Lugger Dam, where that Lugger Dam would have gone. Whether or not if contact, something we need to have a conversation with them about before we know about the plan and make a decision.
So even after they have to prove to us that they need to have those dam sites.
Are they covered by designation?
No, contracts aren't designated for dams. I'm just unsure though how we can make it a permitted activity in the zone which we don't know the area that it's been taught.
That's a vehicle and might have been a response.
We may do by the time it's notified.
Potentially, I mean, this is made in the context of response to a submitter and a vacuum without thinking about the status of that zone overall at this point in time.
Thank you.
So while we wait for Ms. Lamb to put up her materials, I have found in the bundle of petitions we've filed in the past, this is the reply to the strategic directions hearing. We did address the matter of the air noise boundaries at the airport. I might just read you the section, it might be easiest, but this was considered following the conferencing between the respective planning experts and then the resumed hearing.
Yes.
So this is, for your reference, section 3 of the Council's right of reply to the strategic directions hearing dated 7th of April. So the hearing panel identified on the 31st of March that there may be an issue as to whether the panel has scope to consider the location of and justification for the proposed airport air noise boundaries, which were identified in the submission for the airport to be relocated, given that they were identified in the legend and user information page of the planning maps as an operative plan matter, and therefore excluded from the scope of stage 1 or indeed the proposed district plan in its entirety. There is an inconsistency between the legend information of the proposed district plan and what has been included in the planning maps and provisions, and that airport air noise boundaries have been included along with associated provisions. That raises the question of whether one matter should prevail over the other or whether there is an error. The Council's position is that the legend information in the planning maps is incorrect and was incorrectly not deleted despite the late decision to include Plan Change 35 provisions prior to notification of the proposed district plan. And that includes the Plan Change 35 version of the boundaries, except with the error that is addressed in the airport submission. As such, it is submitted that this error can be rectified either through a Clause 16 to a correction or a withdrawal of the incorrect notation on the legend of the planning map under Clause 8D of Schedule 1. In terms of the implications for the panel scope, it is submitted that whether or how the error is rectified does not impact on the panel's scope to address the air noise boundary lines and associated submissions / issues. The substance of these matters was included elsewhere in the proposed plan and has been submitted on. It is also submitted that no submitters are likely to be prejudiced by the panel considering such matters, and that submitters would have had the opportunity to consider the relief sought by the airport in its submission and make a further submission if they consider that necessary. And then it refers to an extract from the airport's supplementary legal submissions with which we agree with. So those submissions are focused on the error in the legend of the planning map, and what that reflects is that it is the Plan Change 35 version of the boundary lines which have been notified, except for the one inconsistency that is raised in the airport's submission relating to Lot 6.
And there is a Change 35 excluding Lot 6.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, and so that answers your question, I think, sir, from this morning. Apologies, it took me a while to work out what was covering it.
That's okay. I've forgotten.
I knew we covered those sort of short words.
Yeah.
So, unless you have any questions on that, I'll ask the staff to read that. Heather, should I ask any questions?
The structure of the notified temporary activities and relocated buildings chapter remains relatively unchanged. I've recommended some changes to provisions which I consider will better achieve the purpose of the chapter, remove unnecessary regulation and reduce ambiguity. I consider the most appropriate activity status is to require a controlled activity regal consent for relocated buildings, along with recommending that the provisions are simplified for clarity and consistency. I recommended changes made in response to submissions, including amendments to notified and redrafted 35.2.6 and notified and redrafted policy 35.2.6.1 to relate to the matters of control and the specific effects of relocated buildings. Amendments to the activity status to ensure that relocated buildings are a controlled activity across all zones. Removal of specifications for shipping containers and accessory buildings, reverting to the regulatory approach for buildings, and new definitions of removal and refining, and amendment of the definition of relocated building and buildings. Temporary activities. Only minor amendments have been recommended to the provisions. A number of submitted for exclusion from the rule framework for their specific activities and or locations. However, for the most part, these submissions have been rejected. I do not consider that it fits within the purpose of a district-wide chapter, which provides for temporary activities of an infrequent nature to contain such specific or bespoke provisions for long-term or regular activities. Minor changes which have been recommended include a new definition for temporary military training activities in reference to this term through the chapter, widening the scope of redrafted objective 35.2.5 for temporary storage so that it applies in all locations, and amendment to redrafted rule 35.5.1 to widen the scope to all types of lighting, including for health and safety purposes. I now address some of the evidence that's been put forward. Relating to temporary obstacles, the evidence of Ms. O'Sullivan suggests an alternative approach of including a non-statutory clarification note which draws attention to the obstacle limitation surface designation. I agree with this suggestion and consider the most practical location for this note may be within the activity table. I disagree with the evidence of Ms. Fiona Black. In my opinion, the duration timeframes of Rule 35.5.8, redrafted 35.4.6, are adequate for a permitted standard. I note this is more enabling than the operative district plan rules, which the submitter should be familiar with for large or recurring temporary events such as the winter festival. While I appreciate the safety concerns expressed by Mr. Anthony McColl, I do not consider sufficient evidence has been put forward that driver distraction is a particular concern for informal airports or temporary events, nor why this activity should be treated any differently to the many other air and water space activities which occur in the district. In response to the legal submissions for Queenstown Park Limited, Remarkables Park Limited and Queenstown Park, I consider that different approaches are necessary for events on private land compared to council or Department of Conservation land. Events on private land do not necessarily have the same wide benefit to the public and can give rise to different effects, particularly on neighbouring land uses. I acknowledge the error raised by Mr. David Cooper and clarify that the rejection indicated in Appendix 2 was based on an earlier iteration of the chapter, in which the notified and redrafted policy 35.2.5.1 and notified policy 35.2.5.2 were to be amended. And on that point, I'd like to correct my evidence on Appendix 2, pages 4 and 5. The response to the submission of Federated Farmers should be and move from reject to accept. And on page 5, the submission of Richard Burden from reject to accept. And I'd also just like to raise an error in the redrafted chapter at 35.3.2.4, where a clarification note has been included to specify to state that the rules relating to temporary activity specified in the noise rules will apply. The intent of that, and it would be better for both things, will not apply, and that change was not raised by submission, but just as a recommendation of myself for clarification.
Could you tell us the number again, please, just for that one?
35.3.2.4.
So you're suggesting that the end will not apply rather than will clear what it meant. I wondered if it might be that it's any other temporary activity or any activity in relation to related buildings that's not listed in the table. Is that the intention that picks up those other?
The intention for that would be consistent with every other chapter, and just that it's a difficult status to capture anything not within the table, but yeah, it would be in this case. So
I'm just wondering if you could perhaps put it again, it just struck me as quite broader than was maybe intended, that you are relying on a chapter rules for compliance as well. In Rule 35.4.9, at the top of page 7, and you've got temporary filming activity in the last part of it, the maximum duration of film shooting not exceeding 7 days, nearly 12 months. Is that a contiguous 7 days or any 7 days? My question is, does it only apply on dock and council lands? And it must be because of, for some reason.
Yeah,
district, the study of the ones where you could have more than 500 people. They might be permitted. Or is it?
So it's the general presence events, the activity table trigger the consent for more than 500 persons, in which case the rule for waste management would then apply, and that would be considered through that process.
So if it was a discretionary activity, would that standard still apply?
If it was a discretionary activity, then the standard would still apply as a permitted standard, and if you didn't comply with that standard, then it would be a discretionary.
But hold on. We look at 35.4.6. Any activity which is not on dockland and council and land that exceeds 500 persons must be discretionary because it exceeds the standard there. I'm trying to get a handle on my understanding of that's the intent.
That would be the intention of the activity status?
Yeah.
Yes.
If it's discretionary, then shipping containers. And then on page 22 of your section 22A report, you deal with that by including them in the building, within the definition of building. Is the intention that shipping containers only get considered a building when they've been used for residential accommodation?
Under the definition of building, that's when they are captured after they're used for residential accommodation, considering or not.
So if I get a shipping container and stick it in my front yard and use it for storage, that wouldn't be a building.
It will be a building, but that would be a building that's not captured by the regulations in the same way that a temporary shipping container might be regulated in the shipping.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure how that works, because the definition of building is the same as the building gate. Does the definition of the building gate include shipping containers?
Buildings and farm buildings, and when shipping containers are brought into the definition of a farm building.
So there's only one definition of building in the plan, and that's the definition says it's a shipping container as a building, and it's been on a slab for residential accommodation for a period exceeding 2 months. So. That to me suggests that other uses of shipping containers on sites are not buildings and not necessarily captured by any of the rules such as setback controls. Is that what you intend, or is it unintended consequences?
No, the intention in the changes was that, however that shipping containers manage whatever form of building is affected under this plan, whether it's a farm building or whether it's a residential building after passing that 2 month period, and that the rules that would apply to it, whatever rules of the plan apply to farm buildings or residential buildings, and in that case the setbacks or any other type standards of the zones apply, and they would capture that shipping container in whatever form it is.
What we're trying to do here, is the council trying to say that if a shipping container is used for less than 2 months for residential purposes, that's a temporary activity and it's permitted?
Essentially, it's simplifying that by not doing it specific focus in this chapter, because you can see through the definition of building that exclusion also includes caravans, tents, and other structures also not captured by the definition of building, so those types of structures would be considered in the same light, and we're potentially saying by not mentioning in the chapter that it was a temporary use, then it's not a building and there wouldn't be any other rules that apply to it.
I have to know the figure. So, if the shipping container is used for a period not exceeding 2 months for accommodation, the idea that it would be a permitted activity and you could use it for that, because it's excluded from the definition of building due to the final bullet point here, in the same way as if you were living on a caravan or a boat on the place. Okay. And that's regardless of the zone that you use it in. So you can use that basically anywhere, and that's the idea that would be captured. Is that correct?
Yes. does it refer to the definition of farm building? Refer to cladding, should we say?
We'll get to farm building. The if he wants to use it, a shipping container, for something other than residential accommodation, does that use separate it from the definition of building, or is it supposed to be captured by that definition?
If you were using shipping container for permanent use,
Let's pretend for the moment I'm not talking about residential. That's to say to store, I don't know, something in it. An LP record collection or something, whatever. You want to use it for that. And you wanted to store it, so then how would that fall into, would that be a temporary activity?
No, well, in that case, I think what you're referring to is more permanent activity, and so in that case, this chapter wouldn't regulate that activity, but the other chapters are applying to the zone, for example, if it was an industrial zone and that shed, that shipping container was used in storage associated with whatever other activity is on the site.
You use the word permanent. What constitutes permanent? What's the trigger for that? In terms of, I'm using a shipping container to store LPs in my residential, stuck in front of my residential lot. I'm trying to understand what triggers the permanent side of it. It's got a permanent for 2 months under this one, but I don't understand what that is in terms of the other sides.
What is temporary is not defined through regardless of shipping container or any other temporary activity under the chapter. There isn't a defined time period.
Other than, doesn't it say something about, it talks about a temporary activity, the use of land buildings, activities for a short duration and are outside the usual for a site. So, my shipping container's full of LPs that I've got on my front yard. When does that shift out of that activity space?
The time frame for that wouldn't be clear, but it would require an assessment of what that shipping container is used in association with on site and the nature of how permanent it is associated with that use. Mm. And that's the activity that you refer to. In that context, the shipping container would get caught up in rules and setbacks for accessory buildings. And they would have some effect on how and where you could locate that shipping container.
Does the council have problems with people using shipping containers for different stuff and just plonking them on their yards, on their sites, like I proposed to do?
Not that I'm aware of. There was a circumstance raised in the monitoring report for the chapter. But I don't believe it's a widespread issue that we're considering.
While you're answering Commissioner Sinclair's questions, I've taken the opportunity to read Section 8 of the Building Act. Shipping containers are clearly contained within the definition of building, and maybe the way that the exemption is written is making it appear as though excluded as buildings. In reality, what is being excluded is the temporary use for 2 months, up to 2 months. And that might need some redrafting to make that more clear. So I think that's the intention that you conveyed, that all of those things, boats, caravans, tents, can be used for up to 2 months temporarily and not be counted as building. But I just don't think the way it is drafted at the moment says that. It seems to exempt them from being buildings in total, and that's not the intention.
I think you agree that the need for that exclusion in the definition has possibly arisen because of, while the shipping container might be a building, people using them for residential activity but not bringing them up to the standards or complying with the rules for residential activity.
Yeah.
So, it's complicating those two issues.
That might be something that needs to come back to us in the definition section. What's that? Page 31, in section 11.17, those three paragraphs there, they're dealing with the food and beverages at temporary events. Do you think it might be useful if the plan was to state that food and beverage activities can be part of a temporary event, but they're not regulated by the plan? That would clarify it for people.
Yeah.
Even if it was only an advice note.
Yeah, that clarification could be helpful given that it's obviously unclear in the way that it's written.
Let's turn to page 40, the relocated buildings. I got the impression that the intention was that relocated buildings didn't capture specially purpose-built new dwellings that were moved to the site from a factory-built house. But I wasn't sure that the rules did that.
Yeah.
Could you just take me through how the rules do exempt those provisions?
So the notified chapter has a limited status for those types of buildings. And it says new builds, relocated residential unit that's been purpose built for relocation. But actual facts that's excluded from the definition of the relocated building. Which has been used as consideration to the house move submission, but essentially your purpose built homes or other buildings were not intended to be managed the same as other older style relocated buildings. So regardless of whether it's older constructed or slightly moved or relocated to the site instead of being constructed, they're both excluded from the definition.
Okay, I understand that. I wonder if that clarification that they're not included, not affected by these rules, but just the zone rules might be a useful advice to note, because again, people tend to consider those relocated, even though they're brand new.
Yeah. That's helpful. that.
I was trying to understand this bit about designations and whether air shows are provided for them, and I understand many in the rural area have some problems with what's provided for by the designation and then what's provided for outside of it. The effects of the air show, do they extend beyond the designated area? So they get a biennial show with the designated area of Wanaka Airport, but are the effects of it in terms of the air show, do they extend beyond that designated area? Sorry, I should have asked. Have you ever been to the Wanaka Air Show?
I haven't been to it. Neither
have I.
Yeah.
The point was, I live about 10 kilometres away from the airport, and I definitely feel the effects of the air show every 2 years. We get a free air show, and
we're not even 20 kilometres away from the air show.
Yeah, so the effect area is obviously larger than the designation area. I am unclear as to how that explosion in the designation situation.
Not particularly wishing to pick on the All Birds Over Wanaka Air Show, but if it's on every 2 years, and it's for, 3 days or something? 3 days. Doesn't sound temporary or unknown. What if it given the definition of a temporary activity of short duration? But here we know it's going to be on what weekends, it on Easter or something?
Easter.
Easter every 2 years from now on, one of our app will be on every other year. Does it fall within the definition of a temporary activity?
That's the position I've taken through the recommendation, is that it's blurring the boundaries of what is temporary and what's regular and permanent. And for that reason, I defer that point to the business hearing stream where the Wanaka Airport mixed-use sector will be considered, and that might be for such explosions to be applied.
Okay. So I suppose that equally applies to those other events that might occur here. Sorry, before I go to that, does one of your air shows, does it currently require a resource consent to run it or anything like that?
They use the designation. They do it within the designation.
They use the designation, but they're raising a similar issue as to what they have done in the rural area in terms of only the required authority being able to use the designation. And of course, it's not just Newport, that's their...
It's not the airport company running it either.
That's right, so that is why they're seeking this relief. But as to how it's currently operational, I can't comment any further, but I understand they...
Right.
To rely on
so
designation.
Currently relying on the designation, but we still have the problem then of activities that occur even just on the edges of the designation that are the currently zoned that needs to be included in this rural chapter. That all needs to be sorted out and that will be done at the...
Yes, the question there is appropriateness of a rural general underlying zone,
yes,
or something more specific, sure, like an airport mixed-use zone that the Queenstown Airport enjoys. And I think we got to the point where the Queenstown Airport and the council were, and then the panel in issuing its minute confirming our request for those submission points to be deferred to the business zone hearing. And the council's recommendation here is that the submission point go with it.
The Woolworths over Monica goes into the same thing, yeah.
Yes.
That sounds like a good idea.
on that point in space of temporary, so-called temporary but repeating events, winter sports.
Winter festival?
No, not winter festival. The winter ski event that's held every 2 years.
Okay, ski we did it.
I've forgotten what it's called.
The winter games.
The winter games, that's...
Thank you.
Yes, yes. That occurs every 2 years. Would that fall into the same category as Woolworths over Wanaka? It's one of those things that is blurring the boundaries between temporary and permanent.
I believe that the submission from the Kedron Outland Resorts, which is, for example, had asked for, well, they asked for exclusion from this chapter, and again, possibly there are things that could be enabled under its own or through a resource consent process, which will ask for that ongoing.
Sort of following on from that, within the definition of temporary activities, and that there doesn't seem to be any time-related terminology within the definition. I just wondered, have you had a look at how temporary activities might have been defined in other parts of the country where it might bring some of that in to provide some clarity around repeating events or, a time such as no longer than 6 months and that sort of thing? Somebody else that might have had it challenged or something, you know, taking glass at the New Zealand where they've done it, then they might have some extra advice from higher up as to it. I then had the same thing about what should happen for the TSS Anslaw annual maintenance request, which would appear to be in the same... Sorry, so we'll probably thrash that to death. Let's move on. I think the Chair's already covered 11.16, removing food and beverage. I wondered whether that made them, instead of being, would make them TAs rather than permitted activities, just because
you take the, I'm assuming as the chair said, the idea is you can have events like that that include, that might require something on the Sale of Liquor Act. You can have that, but you just have to have the separate liquor license for it. The liquor license component isn't trying to be controlled under this, is it?
That's correct.
There appears to be some confusion arising out of the removal of these provisions, and that the submitted seems to be suggesting that this is regulated, but the intention was that it wouldn't be. So, recognising that other processes occur, so submit those activities associated with events. So, perhaps we can look at more mobile phones to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you. 1132, this is about the first law as well. Mr. Barr, you might be able to help us here, because how else is that TSS in-store provided for in the plan? It came up during the rural hearings, but memory being imperfect, I'm hoping you can assist me.
Well, I think it came up in the historic heritage hearing, and the protection.
So, how do I ask this now?
The protection, if the listing was removed because it doesn't meet the definition of historic heritage in the RMA.
And the slipway has a protected status, and that's
the slipway over.
But the fact it's being pulled up onto the slipway and maintained every year for however long, no one's really had an issue with that. We'll try to regulate that in any way, so.
Wasn't the rest of it to do with where it went and the conflict of traffic and things like that on the lake? I'm trying to work out here is, should there be some kind of consistency about the approach to it? But it might be that they're all discrete matters that can't be dealt with that way.
I think we'll take it, we'll have a think about
that,
and I don't know if we
have
the answer for that.
I think it falls into the same category of regular, but short term.
I'm not sure how
and so hence it may not be temporary. Short term being less than a year.
I think to some extent that you actually might have seen this right, but I'm not sure how long you stay anymore.
Judging from the site visit that Commissioner McLeod and I and Commissioner Nixon did of this way, and the parts remaining after the alterations that they did. It has been there for some considerable time and predates the operative plan, I suspect, by probably 70 or 80 years.
I take it the scale and intensity is quite large then.
And probably unaltered. Just the rule here in terms of the repositioning of any existing lawfully established residential unit, flat or accessory building on its own site. What would happen if you wanted to reposition existing lawfully established industrial unit on an industrial site?
I'm just trying to think of the other situations where it might apply. Does it need to be considered in a wider context for the... I don't know if I wanted to relocate my farm and then how would that answer is, if you'd like to think about it and come back to us, that would be fine with us.
Yeah, well, the recommended changes to the definition of relocated building probably provide the answer for you, hopefully. And that it just refers to building and not the residential use of it. So that terminology has been deleted, and then in its place, the definition of relocated building excludes removal and residing is defined as residing of a building, then shifting a building within a site.
Okay, no. That's good. Last question. Has council got any, issues or heavy issues over the last 5 years in regard to relocated buildings and how they can manage that type of thing in terms of consents or whatever, or people doing it unlawfully and that type of thing?
Not that I'm aware of, but it's something I might need to come back to in regard to the fight. However, the approach taken in regulating control activities is continuing to provide a balance between recognizing the possible effects of that activity but enabling it to occur.
When I looked through that, it seemed that the biggest issue was in terms of keeping having conditions that had people do the work to fully establish the relocated building on site, get it all connected up, paint it, all that sort of, that seemed to be what the issue was, and that and the controlled activity space takes that far enough in your view?
That's the intention of what we're controlling. As well as the amusement on those ways.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We finished early. Thank you, Ms. Bates. Very helpful. Did you have some questions?
I have one more response for you. There was a question earlier about the transfer of two submission points for the rural hearing that you picked up in some appendix two. I've been assured that they were considered at the rural hearing. They related to odour sowing. I recall it as well. They were transferred earlier and have been heard. That essentially brings us to the end of the council's evidence.
Just on that point, Ms. Scott, can I suggest that when they have been transferred and already dealt with, they need to meet us and not show up again? In other words, they shouldn't have been in that appendix because we've already dealt with them. Because if they're in the appendix, we feel compelled.
Yes, I have thought through this, and I think it relates to the original allocation of the submission point to the hearing, which the submission would have seen when their submission was first notified. So perhaps some clarification in the appendix that it's already been heard, or I'll look at that and make find a clearer way to provide that information.
Yes, or maybe because there won't be very many instances. But increasing numbers, maybe they be separately advised that it's no longer, but it's already been dealt with.
That seems sensible for transparency reasons. Other than that, I now attend leave you in the hands of officers. So if there are any matters that you would like to see covered in the council's legal reply, I invite you, as we have in the past, to pass that message on,
yes.
And we will endeavour to assist you as much as possible in the reply.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Without adjournment, all. 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Thank you.